This ain't Texas. Ooh. Ain't no hold 'em. Hey. So lay your cards down, 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 down. So park your Lexus. Ooh. And throw your keys up. You come close, some sugar on me, honey, too. It's a real live boogie and a real live hold down. Don't be a bitch, come take it to the floor now. Woo! There's a tornado.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. Or welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to Civic Media's special DNC coverage live from downtown Chicago. It is my honor and privilege to welcome D.C. Metro Police Officer Daniel Hodges. Excuse me. Welcome, Daniel. I really appreciate you making time.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it truly is a humbling privilege. You were there on January 6th, Daniel. You've testified before the January 6th committee. You also testified in court against three J6 defendants. So you've told your story a number of times.
I have, yes.
But as you and I were talking about just before we came on air, it's so important for people to hear it.
It is, especially since there's unfortunately so many people out there who's still trying to lie about what happened that day and whitewashing the violence and the stakes. So I feel it's important for me to make sure that the truth gets heard and that the people who need to hear it, hear it.
If you will, Daniel, share with us what happened. You were not actually there for very long before the crowd really had gotten out of control and you found yourself in quite a dangerous position.
Correct. So, yeah, I'm here today at the DNC in my personal capacity and not representing the department or my employer because I want people to know about what happened. And what happened was I was there on January 6th. I think I started around 7 in the morning. And I was initially assigned to Constitution Avenue, which is a street just outside of the Ellipse where Donald Trump's rally was being held. And when the rally ended, everyone filed out of the Ellipse and went down towards the Capitol. And as more and more people arrived at the Capitol, I could hear on my radio the commander there, who was in charge of the defense, just getting more and more agitated, more and more afraid. You could hear, you know, the anxiety and fear in his voice. And until eventually he called us and my CDU or Civil Disturbance Unit to the Capitol to support the defense there. So once we got that call, we went back to our transports, got on our riot gear, and made our way towards the Capitol grounds. Once we were there, we got out on foot, and there was already a huge crowd encircling the building, so we had to fight our way through the crowd to the West Terrace itself. Fighting our way through the crowd, they at first they just started name-calling, called us oathbreakers, traitors, stormtroopers, but as we got closer and the crowd became more dense, they became more aggressive until they started attacking us. And they threw things at us, punched, kick, pushing. Someone tried to steal my baton, and we went to the ground wrestling for control over it until he kicked me in the chest, and I went to the ground on all fours, surrounded. Thankfully, my colleagues backed me up. I was able to get back up on my feet, and we fought our way to the West Terrace itself, where there was already a police line being held against thousands and thousands of people. On the West Terrace, we held the line there for as long as we could, until eventually they broke through. They were just completely overwhelmed us with numbers. And then the West Terrace devolved into a series of pitched battles in between individuals and small groups. There was a group of a couple, the insurrectionists, who pushed me back from the line into about a waist-high wall and held me there while another person reached up under my mask and tried to gouge out my eye with his thumb. Thankfully, I was able to shake him off before any permanent damage was done, and we fell back to the building itself, where we regrouped, and I put on my gas mask, found my way to the area that's known today as the tunnel, which is the hallway in between the Upper West Terrace and the room known as the Crypt in the Capitol building. So we mounted a defense there, and it was just virtually unlimited number of insurrectionists versus a couple dozen police officers. And we just held the line there as long as we could. Eventually, I've made my way to the front of the line in the tunnel. And I fought them there. I used the building, the frame of a door, to bolster my strength and just sort of push off against the crowd. But unfortunately, momentum had shifted to the point where I was pinned against the doorframe. My arms were pinned to my side. I couldn't muster any defense on my own behalf. So I was effectively defenseless. There were those at the front of the assault who took advantage of my state. I was being crushed against the doorframe by a group who was synchronizing their movements to more effectively launch an attack. Someone reached up and grabbed my gas mask, essentially punching me in the face several times with it, and then ripped it off my head. He stole my riot baton and beat me in the head with it. And at that point, you know, I thought that could be it, that I could die there because there was no... Everyone else was occupied. I had no way to defend myself. The only thing I could do was call for help, so that's what I did. And thankfully, other officers heard my call for help. They were able to get me out of there. And I fell back to the crypt where I took a few minutes to myself, got myself back together, and went back out there because the fight wasn't over yet. The stakes were still high. We had to still repel this invading force. So I went back to the, I took another, a different stairway to the Upper West Terrace and held the line out there until, thankfully, reinforcements started to arrive from outside agencies. And I fell back to the crypt again, where I waited for the rest of my colleagues who joined me from my platoon. And we stayed there essentially for the rest of the night while reinforcements kept arriving and taking care of the crowd until eventually we were allowed to leave and go back into the city where we had to wait again. Those who needed immediate medical treatment went to hospitals where, and the rest of us went to the city center because even though the Capitol grounds had been cleared from these insurrectionists, they were still in the city.
Yes.
So we had to wait around for an hour or two until we got the all clear to go home. I think I got home around 1 or 2 in the morning. So it was, you know, a 19, 20 hour day, something like that.
I can't, it defies human imagination. I mean, what you're describing is basically war. And the fact that these were our own citizens, and that we should have a common purpose to always see to the peaceful transition of power is just the cognitive dissonance, even sitting here next to you, Daniel, and listening to you talk about it is overwhelming to me. And I didn't go through any of this physical experience. By your recounting, at least 3 times you thought you may very well lose your life that day.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very real. The danger was extreme. There's intense violence. And I'm grateful I made it out intact.
As am I. You continue to serve with DC Metro.
I do. Yes.
Did you consider at any point stepping back from being a law enforcement officer because of what happened that day?
No. I don't know what else I would do, honestly. I'm happy where I'm at. And that's what happened on January 6th is obviously unique. I've policed many, many First Amendment assemblies and riots before, mm-hmm. and nothing like that has ever happened, and I'm hoping will never happen again. So I don't let that define the career for me.
Yeah, I will say, very personally, on my own behalf, you're an American hero, and I thank you for everything that you did that day and for your bravery and courage. And your courage in speaking out, because I know that may not be universally well received by all of your law enforcement colleagues. I'm not speaking specifically about DC Metro, but just writ large. So the continuing courage and bravery to talk about this, I think, is truly extraordinary and deserves our thanks and praise. I appreciate your commitment to the truth and to democracy, right? You would have done the same had it been a Republican president that should have been taking over power and control. This wasn't about partisanship.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I always tell people is, you know, if, you know, hypothetically it was Hillary Clinton that won in 2016 and then she was conspiring to withhold power in 2020 after losing an election, I would have done the exact same thing and I'd be saying the exact same thing I'm saying now. It's not about the politics of it. It's about the republic and preserving democracy in our country.
If you were, if a person was sitting next to you right now, Officer Hodges, that was asserting that these were Antifa protesters and not there for Donald Trump, or a person that was denying that this was as violent and life-threatening and dangerous as it actually was, what would you say to that person?
Well, I'm sort of unique in that I'm one of the few law enforcement officers in the country who have actually dealt with, I guess, what they would consider Antifa, because I was still a police officer in 2020 when the Black Lives Matter protests and riots were taking place. Mm-hmm. You know, I've faced them as well. And the people who attacked us on January 6th were not Antifa, whatever you imagine them to be. When we dealt with the violent groups in 2020, it was incredibly different in that violence for them was the goal. Whereas on January 6th, the violence had a purpose behind it. They wanted to prevent the peaceful transfer of power. In 2020, the violent groups were more about anarchy and just violence.
Disruption,
violence,
yeah. Right?
And then
yeah.
In 2020, when we used defensive tactics, they were effective. There was more the violent elements of those crowds were engaged in more hit-and-run tactics. Whereas on January 6th, there was very much a
sustained,
forward.
Yes. Yeah.
They would get in that building at all costs.
Did you perceive on January 6th some level of coordination?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No question.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying every one of the thousands and thousands were
right.
on the same page, but there were absolutely groups who had planned out what they were going to do.
I have a follow-up question to that. Officer Hodges, what do you say to people who were there at the protests who maybe joined the crowd but didn't actually strike an officer? In other words, that were part or on the periphery of the violence and sort of disclaim responsibility.
Everyone, the most effective weapon used that day, and there were many weapons used that day, was the crowd itself. Every single member in the crowd contributed to the defense of the violent and made it more difficult for us to do our jobs because they would... The people who were violent would make an attack and then sort of fall back into the crowd itself where we couldn't effectively engage them
right.
without engaging everyone else. Mm. So everyone who was there, not only, you know, if they were just trespassing, they were breaking the law and they were providing cover for those who were being violent and attempting to stop the transfer of power. So I don't buy into this innocence thing.
A moral and practical responsibility. My deepest personal thanks to you, Officer Hodges. Very special guest, officer from the D.C. Metro Police, Daniel Hodges, who was there on January 6th. My thanks to you, sir. You're an American hero.
Thank you very much.
I'm Maggie Dawn, folks. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with former Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh. We're going to light it up because it deserves to get lit up here at Civic Media's special coverage of the DNC from downtown Chicago.
She's just a girl and she's on fire. Hotter than a fantasy, lonely like a highway. She's living in a world and it's on fire. Filled with catastrophe, but she knows she can fly away.
Girl is on fire because Kamala's on fire. Welcome back, Wisconsin. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network special live coverage from downtown Chicago here at the United Center for the 2024 DNC. And if I'm on fire, I think this guy's an inferno. I'm joined by former Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh. Thank you so much. You've been on the show before. It's such a treat to meet you in person. Thanks,
Maggie,
for making time, Joe.
It's great to be with you. I mean it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. So much to talk about. I think close to 30,000 people, and if you throw in the folks at Fiserv last night, had like a collective spiritual experience. I know you were watching. What was a highlight for you last night? And do a little compare contrast between the ridiculousness of the RNC, complete with Kid Rock, Hulk Hogan, Dana White, and the Goof Troop, and what we witnessed yesterday.
Well, so you know my history. I'm
yes.
not a Democrat.
Yes.
I went to bed last night after watching last night, and I thought to myself, I agree with everything Barack Obama is saying. And damn near everything Michelle Obama said.
Yes.
8, 9, 10, 12 years ago, I am like ripping the tar off of Obama. I'm going after Obama every day. I'm like this with Barack Obama. And last night, I'm agreeing with everything he said. It shows how much our politics has changed. It shows how much my former party has changed. I was just blown away by that.
I didn't even think of this question until you said what you just did, Joe. Huh? Because I think we talk a lot about the takeover of the GOP. It's not the grand old party anymore. It's not Republicanism. It's not the party of Ronald Reagan. It is not a conservative movement. It's a stinking cult led by a man that has serious mental faculty issues.
Yes.
But we don't talk a lot about how the Democratic Party has evolved, how it has changed. And I think your statement just moments ago, Joe, points to the fact that the Democratic Party has changed. From your seat as a former Republican congressman, what changes have you seen in the Democratic Party in the face of what is, I think, a threat to decency, a threat to common sense, and a threat to democracy?
That's a great question, Maggie. And look, I've changed a lot. I've woken up, and I'm not the political jerk. I don't know what I can say on the radio
anymore. You
can
say jerk.
Oh, I want to say so much more than that. I was way worse than a jerk. So I've grown. But the Democratic Party, in my mind, for years has had a problem. They've become an elitist party, like the wealthy suburbanites, the wine drinking, and they've lost connections with like the regular Joe out there, the blue collar working class, white, black, and brown folk. Obama last night spoke to those folk and talked about hard work and sticking together and looking after each other. He spoke to regular people. Tim Walz represents that.
Yes.
So as a non-Democrat, Mag, I was thinking, oh my God, the Democrats have learned now. They're going to go grab those regular folk back. It's a great thing.
I agree with you. I'll be very, very candid in a way that I don't think I've actually ever said this on the radio. So I think by many accounts, many people might have considered me an elite, right? I went to law school, these kinds of, right? I'm an economist, et cetera, et cetera. I lived in an urban center, always did, worked for a fancy law firm.
You drink Chardonnay, probably.
I'm more of a Sauvignon Blanc, but again, this is
elite,
sort of reaffirmed. Yeah, mm-hmm. But here's what I knew about the Democratic Party of 20 years ago. I was very unlikely to nearly certain to never be hired by anyone within the Democratic Party because I candidly didn't go to an Ivy League school.
Yeah.
It was that sort of insulated.
Yeah.
Those things have fallen away. I am not seeing that. I think the party has intentionally or unintentionally, and I don't care whether it was by necessity or by natural organic progression, but when I look at people within the Democratic Party and trying to build some of that next generation of leadership, I don't see those same doors closed. I see sort of all of them blown off and a very explicit engagement and desire to make sure that everyone knows that they have a place in this party.
Look, Obama's wised up and grown. Do you remember when Obama first ran for president? He's campaigning in Iowa in 2008. He went to some Iowa grocery store, and they didn't have like arugula lettuce, and he was all upset about
Where's
that.
Where's the arugula?
Where's the arugula? And Barack Obama's a brilliant guy and a great guy, but there's been a problem in that the Democratic Party has focused on important issues, social issues, LGBTQ issues, all good important issues, but they've lost touch with like bread and butter issues, the price of gas, boom, boom, the stuff that regular people care about.
But they're back. Yes.
Maggie, I heard that last night.
Yes,
I heard that
I
from Michelle Obama. I heard that from Barack Obama. You're going to hear that from Tim Walz tonight.
Yes.
A very good
pick. You pick a school teacher and a coach as your VP candidate. It's like, yes, thank you. This makes sense.
Because if they didn't do that, as bad as Trump and my former party are, they were grabbing these people.
Yes.
Trump's been successful grabbing voters without a college education.
And well, if you don't speak to people, right, if you don't make people feel like they're heard and seen and part of the movement, they'll find a different place. I think page turned to Kamala Harris, like the next generation of leadership. Yeah. The evolution of both Michelle and Barack Obama, the manner of speaking last night, the use of humor, the use of normalcy.
Doug Emhoff.
Yes, talking like normal people do.
Like the freaking way you and I talk.
Yes.
I left her my cell phone number. God, I hope she's
sounded like a moron.
But a regular guy.
100%.
Trying to have a date with a regular girl. That's the kind of stuff that Democrats need.
The moment that started to choke me up was when Michelle introduced Barack Obama and they shared this hug as a couple and gave each other a kiss. I was like, oh my goodness. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the way that like it looks when normal people are doing those things. I mean, Obama's arugula of 15 years ago is J.D. Vance's Where's the Swiss Cheese of today. I mean, come on, brother. It is the inverse, right? We now have a billionaire, right? And a guy that was handpicked by a billionaire who went to Yale Law School. That's where we're at. Back in Wisconsin in our Senate races, you got billionaire number one, Rojo, talking about how hard it is to be a billionaire. And billionaire wannabe billionaire number two, Eric Hovde. What are we going to do? Have just the elites running Wisconsin
but,
politics?
But, Mag, Trump wins if the election's tomorrow. So we all, this beautiful coalition now that I'm part of, we got to work our tails off these final 77 days to keep Trump out of the White House.
Yeah, no more elites.
No more elites. Regular people. Beer, shot of tequila, baby.
I love it. We're going to be partying here. I got Joe Walsh with me, former congressman. Can you stick around for another hit or you got to go?
Oh, my God.
I know the burden. One more, yes. We'll come back with more.
Because I like Maggie.
With Joe Walsh, former Illinois Republican congressman, friend of mine, now friend of yours. Keep it locked, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn, here with Civic Media's special DNC coverage.
She's just a girl, but she's on fire.
Trump know that respect is usually earned, not demanded? I doubt it. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network special live coverage from the Chicago 2024 DNC. Here at the United Center, I'm joined once again by former Illinois GOP Congressman Joe Walsh. Thanks for sticking around, Joe. It's awesome to have you. I do get a few daily little news bites from the far right fringes because, you know, important to keep your finger on the pulse of what the other side is saying and doing. This morning, I got one of these updates from an outlet called The Writing. Their tagline is top news headlines from the far right for the rest of us, which always means it's going to be comedic fun as I peruse what they have in their daily update. Here's what one of the pieces that they highlighted, the title was, Angry, Delusional, and Devoid of Solutions, Day 2 at the DNC. Here's another one.
Jeez.
From Newsmax. They're right over there. Every time I walk past their booth, I give them a little hiss. This is the headline.
By the way, Maggie, I used to have a show at Newsmax.
I'm aware.
That shows how...
You've come a long way, babe.
Oh, baby. Continue, Mac. Let's brush over that. Yeah, continue.
Yeah. We're sweeping. That sound you hear is us sweeping Joe's past with Newsmax right under the rug. The Newsmax headline, the DNC is pure anti-Americanism. Here's another one from the National Review complaining about the fact that it was the schedule is a little behind. Can't anyone run a convention? Blaze Media, Walls is the perfect salesman for the Democrats' anti-white policies. The Gateway Pundit, Obama makes trashy joke about penis size during DNC speech. The Washington Stand, Michelle Obama endorses porn in school.
Oh, my God.
And transing kids. New York Post, Obama's lecture, America on decency. It goes on.
So
what planet are they on?
They're on a planet that I used to live on, Mag.
Yes.
Where, as a former right-wing radio guy, you have a rock solid base of listeners who is scared to death with where this country's been headed, and you feed them stuff like, I caught myself, you feed them stuff like yes. that every day to keep them wound up. And you and I've talked, I did more of this than I'm proud of. You want to keep them inflamed and scared. It's like Trump. Trump's trying to scare people into voting for him. That's what they do. That's what I did too much of in right-wing media. It's a shame.
Yeah, it's the one that sort of blows me away the most is from Town Hall. Kamala's authoritarian, quote, joy. Like
authoritarian joy.
Right. It's by Ben Shapiro, so this would be what you would expect. Joy is a sword to be used against opponents, he writes. Donald Trump, we are told, is a candidate of darkness and revenge. J.D. Vance, his vice presidential candidate, is weird and authoritarian. Why can't Democrats feel the joy? What are they talking about?
They're projecting.
Yes, of course. This is the psych diagnosis every time. It's called projection.
It's... Maggie, and I don't know what's going to win. You and I know what we want to win.
Yes.
We want hope and joy and optimism to defeat fear. It's like Barack Obama and Kamala Harris and the Democrats are appearing to our better angels. This is all appearing to our primal fears.
Yes.
Now, it worked in 2016. 2020 was neck and neck.
Yes.
You and I have talked before, average voters are pissed off.
Yes.
So do they want to be fed more anger or joy?
Yes.
I don't know.
You know, I sometimes put it about projection, the gaslighting of America. Do you want the red pill or the blue pill? Do you want to see the Matrix? I mean, pick your tortured metaphor. But I thought Barack Obama put it incredibly well. Jess, if we can get the last Barack Obama cut from yesterday, this is about the sequel. If we can run that clip, that'd be great.
Four more years of bluster and bumbling and chaos. We have seen that movie before, and we all know that the sequel is usually worse.
That's good.
I thought that was a great line, because even if you're inclined to the more conservative end of politics, that is a statement of fact.
And Maggie, that's effective. As someone who talks to Trump supporters every day still,
yes,
even some of them, Maggie, will tell me, oh, I don't want four more years of the... So that actually is an effective line of attack.
Well, I think that's, you know, when you... I've seen different commentary that talks about the best way to deal with the Donald Trumps of the world. And we know these from the schoolyards to the Oval Office is always the same. The best attack is making fun of them, basically, and showing that in this case, the emperor indeed has no clothes. I find it incredibly hilarious to this point that some of the right has lost their mind about the Obama joke, right? The joke of jokes that will haunt Donald Trump for the rest of his career. It's like, listen, your guy set the table for talking about anatomical aptitude, and Obama just slammed the door. Here's another, Jess, I would love to hear this sound. This is about the don't boo vote. Here's from Obama last night.
Do not boo.
Yeah.
Vote.
And that was like Michelle Obama's line, do something. Do something.
Which just the entire crowd roared up.
And I get it. Look, I know it's good. It probably works to make fun of Trump. Because I come from Trump's world, I can't do that. I just get pissed off. That son of a gun tried to overthrow an American election.
Yes.
He will never accept the results of a loss. That pisses me off. I know Kamala Harris won't do that, but I want to call him out and call him out for the threat he is. I'm not as clever and smart as Barack Obama, so I couldn't just make fun of him. I want to punch Donald Trump.
Yeah, he's pretty terrible. When you're talking to Trumpkins and folks that are saying they're going to vote for him again, even the folks that say, I know he's not a good person, but I like his policies, which is what I get to hear all the time. And I say, well, which one? Well, let's deport 12 million people. Well, how are you going to do it? Well, I don't know. We're just going to do it. Like, this isn't how any of this works. How do you help people get past
that? They like his policies, and they like the fact that he goes after people like you.
Uh-huh.
They tell me every day, Joe, he may be a bad guy, but he's going after our enemies. He's going after CNN, the fake news.
Yeah.
He's going after the Democrats, the socialists, and the communists. So even if he's a bad guy, he's going after their enemies. Jim Jordan, who I served with.
Yeah.
Don't get mad at me. I see you clenching a fist. Don't punch me. Jim Jordan and I used
Not you, Joe. I'll punch Jim.
Good.
Yeah.
Jordan and I used to be damn good friends. We were very close. That's Jordan's line. Jordan would tell me privately, Joe, I know Trump's a bad guy, but they're the enemy over there. And as long as he's my coach and he's going after that enemy, I don't care what Trump does.
So let me ask you a question about that. I find it so perplexing, and I'm pausing because Trump gave the largest tax cut to millionaires, billionaires, and America's most profitable corporations that we've seen in 25 years.
But many Republicans are fine with that.
Right. But the core of the voting base isn't.
Well.
Right? They're
not the wealthy. Yeah, the core of the voting
correct.
Base is not wealthy.
And it's like, how do people just not understand what went down? Do they not understand that he's shilling for rich people, that's what all of this is about?
So, and you may disagree with me. I'll defend the voting base on this one. Because historically, when you poll Americans against other European countries, there is always very little class envy in this country. And I think that's a good thing. It's a uniquely American thing. Like average middle-class poor people don't want wealthy people taxed too much. You know why, Mag? Because they aspire to be that person. We still.
But that's a lie. The polling does, but actual economics doesn't. It is less likely today than it was before Ronald Reagan was elected for someone that comes from a working-class family to become a millionaire. Fact, less likely today.
Well, still better than any other country in the world. Like, we are still the land of, and there's still some truth, but some of it's perception. Don't give me that look. This is still the land of opportunity.
I love that we could do, like, shows on this. That's the mythology of meritocracy.
Oh, more than the mythology, though, right?
Yeah, except if you are one of those people that does work three jobs and can't get ahead and can't buy a house and can't do those things.
I agree.
And somebody's telling you billionaires need to pay less taxes?
Right.
Isn't the end result of that inexorably? Inexorably, if we gave Republicans and Donald Trump and the billionaire class and the wealthiest corporations what they've been begging for years, which is even lower taxes, doesn't that inexorably lead us to a place where we have to cut Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security?
No. But I'm going to call a timeout on both of us.
Okay.
Because you have to promise me we'll have a special show on this topic.
Just this?
Mag,
I love this topic.
I love this, so I'm going to call timeout.
Perfect. Put a pin in it.
A pin.
We'll put a pin.
But you asked me, his base doesn't mind. Because they still think I want to be that one day. Here she goes again.
We put a pin in it. Well, you don't get to have the last word, Joe.
Oh, my
you don't
God,
get
time
to
out.
Say, like, I get to
get
say.
Get me out of this studio. I'm being attacked.
This is all the point. Because to me, this election is actually about the money. And that, when you strip away all of the blunderbuss that comes from the GOP, Donald Trump and J.D. Vance, billionaire bought, billionaire boys club, that's what it's always been about. And Democrats' failure to make that case abundantly clear to some of Trump's base, I think, is a challenge for us and a challenge that we're doing
My
better
God.
At.
I thought this was right-wing talk radio. Nobody told me this was a lefty radio show. Oh, my God. Mag, you and I'll have the best conversation on this topic.
Because
I think by the way, it's a really important topic. And by the way, because of Trump, we don't talk about issues like this anymore.
Correct. It's the keys in the baby's face, right? We get all distracted by the woke nonsense.
And you made this point. Democrats don't talk about this stuff enough anymore.
Nearly enough.
Agreed.
You'll be happy to know this, Joe, and maybe we can dovetail this somehow. Every day on my show at 3:00, starting this coming Monday.
What?
I'm going to be talking to millionaires about this very problem. It's going
That's
to be
so
called
cool.
Maggie and the Millionaires. We're going to talk about tax policy and economic policy.
And you're
going
to get enough of
policy.
Them to talk to you?
Hell yes.
Hell yeah.
Because many, many millionaires and certainly a handful of billionaires
understand that the way our tax system is structured is inherently unfair, that we must tax work just as, excuse me, we must tax wealth.
How about a flat tax, one rate?
Go buzz off, Joe. That's going to kill the poor in the middle class. Even my producers are like, hell no.
See, I thought I had him. I just lost him.
All right. One last bit of sound from last night, Jess. I want to hear from Michelle talking about how this is going to be a close election to exactly your point, Joe. Then I'm going to give you the last word of the afternoon. Maybe.
I don't know that we're friends anymore.
Let's hear from Michelle Obama last night, Jess, talking about how close of an election this is going to be.
This election is going to be close. In some states, just a handful, listen to me, a handful of votes in every precinct could decide the winner. So we need to vote in numbers that erase any doubt.
Isn't that what it's about here, Joe? We've got to make a clear statement. If you happen to maybe be more inclined to Joe's view of the tax policy universe, I want to get back to a place, Joe, where all we have to do is you and me arguing about tax and economic policy. You know, when politics used to be normal.
I love this marriage. Maggie and Joe are locked arms. No, hold on a minute. We're locked arms because we're on a common mission to defeat that evil guy who's a threat to our democracy.
Yes.
And I love this alliance. Yes. But it's a beautiful temporary alliance because when we defeat him, then you and I are going to get to a place, but not respectfully.
Of course.
I cannot wait for that. And it's so cool to be on the same side with you now. Because I think when we're not on the same side, I think I'm going to get pounded.
Me too. We got to keep it popping, Joe. It's always fun to have the good, important arguments, not having to argue about the very baseline of what we should all expect from our elected officials.
She's the best.
Let's wrap it up. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to Civic Media Radio Network's special DNC coverage. We'll be back in just a moment. But Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are going to make them look so much better. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to Civic Media Radio Network's special live coverage from downtown Chicago at the 2024 DNC. I'm joined by Wisconsin delegate and lawyer extraordinaire, Craig Mastantuono. Welcome, Craig. Thanks so much for making time.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
How's your convention going?
Hey, you know, it feels like it looks. It's exciting. The excitement is translating over to the delegate experience. We're all getting a little tired, right?
Oh, my goodness. I was like, we have to do
two more
nights.
Right. 16-hour days for 50-something-year-olds aren't exactly healthy, especially when those days involve long walks, short workouts, and, a little bit of alcohol here and there, too.
A wee bit of alcohol.
A little bit.
What has been your favorite handful of moments thus far, Craig?
You know, after last night, I just can't. How do you not pause on Michelle Obama? You know, and look, I've been to conventions before. I've seen both of them speak before. And I still was watching them going, are these characters from the Black Panther movie or something? They're like superpower people, right?
Yes.
I mean, they make it look too easy because that is not easy to do.
Yes.
From the words to the themes to the facial expressions to the delivery.
Impeccable from a public speaking person. I mean, like, literally between Doug Emhoff, Michelle Obama, and Barack Obama, it's a public speaking clinic getting put on. Forget the content.
Right?
Then you layer in the content and the message. It was incredible. I mean, to me, Doug Emhoff, right? Like, I love my wife. Here's a man showing us all what a man looks like and should look like and should feel like in modern day America. To Michelle Obama going on the offensive. Really landing some incredible punches and then calling upon our better angels. And finally, Barack Obama showing up as the elder statesman. great humor, great lines, but great overarching themes.
Absolutely. You analyze it similarly to myself. I'm a trial lawyer. Right?
Yes.
If those were three witnesses on the afternoon of a trial, you'd be feeling pretty good going to closing arguments.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. We'd be winning this case right. For sure.
Right. So the next 2 days are going to be critical. Because
yes.
Governor Walz and then Vice President Harris are going to have to deliver,
yes.
With the wind at their backs. But they still got to walk it through, and I'm looking forward to seeing how they tackle that.
Here, I'm going to give you this impression that I've got. And I've made this argument to conservative friends of mine before. When I look at the leaders that the Democratic Party has fielded over the last 15 years, whether you're talking about at the national level, the state level, or the local level.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the stinking A-team.
Yeah.
Okay?
Absolutely.
And some of it's about style, but I also talk about the fact that I love that Tony Evers ain't got that swag, right? Like, that's
right.
Part of what makes Tony so very reflective of regular Wisconsinites. But he's a really great, smart man, a decent man, an excellent administrator, right? An excellent leader. You look at the speakers last night. You look at David Crowley, Cavalier Johnson, Marcelia Nicholson, Jose Perez, all of these folks coming up through the Democratic pipeline. This is the party of the A-team.
100. You know, you took the names out of my mouth. I was going to mention those local leaders
yes.
that we have who are all such impressive people. And, you know, good people. I'm sitting
yes.
with them each evening, right?
Yes.
You know, I see the way they talk about their kids, about the way they fill their time, about how they treat delegates who, you know, are thrilled just to see them
yes.
from other parts of the state and are asking
yes.
them for selfies and photos. And, you know, these are good people. They're not self-interested to the degree that certainly we see on the other side with former President Trump, but also a lot of other people, including J.D. Vance, who, you know, appears to be able to say anything
at any point in time. And whatever comes out of his mouth on whatever topic, it's awkward, the wrong thing to say, and will definitely offend
100%.
Usually women.
You know, there's another level to it, and it's
yes.
that part that you're alluding to. Is there's a lot of people like that in politics, right, that are willing to change their positions
yes.
for political fee. He can't even do it convincingly. He seems creepy in the process, right?
Yes.
Everybody knows that guy from school. Everybody knows that guy in their lives that is just, you know, has a high ick factor.
Yes. Yeah. He's sort of like the Ted Cruz of modern day presidential
right. good
politics. Like, everybody hated Ted. J.D. Vance has that equal icky ew factor. People, in general, I think your average Wisconsinite isn't impressed by people who display virulent situational ethics.
No.
They don't like people who speak in riddles and rhymes.
Certainly not in the Midwest.
No.
I don't know how he got over in Ohio.
Peter Thiel. I mean,
right, right, yeah.
Like,
well, a billionaire
probably,
sponsor
yes,
helps.
I probably could win an election with 10 mil through a 501c4 directed to my campaign. Anybody could, a sock puppet, if you will.
A billionaire sponsor helps. Let me tell you a little delegate story. You got
yes,
30 seconds for
please.
One, just for some inside dope.
We got time.
Maybe 2 weeks before President Biden decided to exit the race, my phone rings, my cell phone, and I see Wilmington DE on the.
Yes.
So I thought, well, I better answer this one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a delegate. And it's one of the delegate wranglers, right, for the party, just checking in, seeing
yes,
if I need
how
help.
You doing?
Right. A wellness check, let's just say, right? And so I, you know, being myself and being a lawyer, and I said, yeah, I'm fine. Don't worry about that. Hey, what's your role? So he tells me his title, and it involves Midwest Delegate Group, right?
Okay.
And I say, well, that's really nice. That's a nice role. I'm referring to the fact that he's got the battleground states. He's got Minnesota, Michigan, mm-hmm. Wisconsin. He goes, yeah. Everybody's so nice. I thought this is precious. I wish I had it recorded. It was beautiful.
What an encapsulation. I've got a little joke for you, totally off topic, Craig, but because we're both trial lawyers, I'll hit you with it. I grew up as a baby lawyer in New York City.
Okay.
And was working on very expensive litigation cases. And then I moved back to the Midwest and kept doing trial work. And the first thing that was said to me when I was in court, this is the first or second time, court reporter, slow down, because
of course.
I was talking in a...
I'm Italian-Mexican. I get that all the time.
Roger that. And then the second thing, I'll summarize it thusly. When you're in New York and you're a litigator, oftentimes what you will see is, and I'm going to use the conference table as a metaphor, but it can be a courtroom, people you just go after each other directly, and then you walk out a corridor of the conference room and you go have dinner and a drink together, right, and everybody gets along. In Wisconsin, we're very nice to one, one another to the face, but then you leave and they talk a bunch of right, hooey about right, you. Right. Though, you know, a little bit back channeling.
No steaks and Cabernets after that, right?
No steaks and Cabernets. Right. Listen, Craig, we're running out of time. If you have time tomorrow, I'd love to start with you if you can fit it into your delegate schedule. I love talking to other lawyers.
Love to talk about my two issues if you got time, Latino issues and criminal justice issues.
We will do that tomorrow.
Let's,
Craig, I promise. I'll start with you. Craig, delegate from the state of Wisconsin and a terrific lawyer, my friend, and now each and every one of yours. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network's special live coverage from downtown Chicago at the United Center here at the 2024 DNC. The Devil's Advocates are up next. Stay tuned, everyone.